I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Luke's Massive Storytelling Podcast Thing. Whoa, yeah. Here we go. Check it out now. Enjoy.
Hello and welcome to Luke's Massive Storytelling Podcast Thing. My name is Luke and this is my thing. It's pretty early in the morning. I'm just recording the intros and outro bits right now because this is all the time I had. I was just finished proofing my first novel, The Hipster from Outer Space, and it feels pretty good to have that done. So that's going to go live January 1st. Pretty excited. And it's also pretty nerve-wracking. But it's probably going to be the best way for me to start 2016. Cool. Okay, so today is an interview show. I got two guys coming up, actually. Two horror guys. One this week and then one next week. Next week is Jay Fawn. But today we've got horror author and podcaster Zach Bohannon, offering some insanely popular zombie books called The Empty Body series. He's also written several other novels and short stories, all of which are the kind of stories that will make you and all your future children lose their bowel control. He also co-hosts the Horror Writers Podcast with fellow author Jay Fawn, and he's a former drummer for a heavy metal band, and is so metal that if you were to remove his skin, you would see that his skin is actually just an outer shell, hiding the T-100 model beneath. An older model, but still very effective. He's so metal that the devil once sold his soul to Zach in exchange for a copy of the Empty Bodies books. Cool. Okay, let's jump in. Let's speak to Zach.
Okay, so to start us off, I was just looking through your Amazon profile. You published Heritage, a short story, on the 8th of December. Is that right?
I'm trying to remember.
Okay.
Because that was originally in a like an anthology I did, like a short story collection. And then I ended up putting it out on its own separately. So that's probably about right. Like Empty Bodies is the first actual novel I put out.
Cool.
And I think that was out like, I don't even remember at this point. I've published so much stuff this year, I don't even remember. But Heritage is just like a little, it's just like a 5,000 word short story that that was in a collection and I put out individually. So I guess it would have been around then. But like I said, Empty Bodies was like the first major thing I put out. So,
well, the published date on Heritage is the 8th of December, which, like, that's Tuesday coming up, like an anniversary.
Oh, right on.
Which, looking at your like bibliography, I thought that was amazing. But you're saying you published later on in the year.
Empty Bodies, which is my first novel, I believe I published in February, like the very first of February, I think. And that was like my first novel, and that's kind of the thing that really took off. So I mean, you can mention Heritage if you want. But that's definitely like, I kind of just have that up for visibility.
Yeah.
To have extra stuff on Amazon. But I mean, no one buys it.
It was amazing to me that you'd published so much in such a short space of time, but now it's like you've done even more in a shorter space of time. So
yeah, I just finished, this Tuesday. I will have my, let me think for a second, my sixth novel out this year.
Sixth novel. Okay.
That, Yeah, that came out this year. So it'll be the fourth book in my Empty Body series. And then I have two standalone novels as well.
And what are the word counts on these looking like?
They're pretty short. The Empty Bodies books usually are around 55,000 words. My longest book is a novel called Lines of the Devil, and it's 65,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Are you happy with how much you've put out?
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. Before this year, I was just wanting to get one book done. So, you know, but once I focused on it, it was just kind of, I'm very, very happy. And the books have gotten better as I've gone along too, like the writing. So I'm more proud of that, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
What, so take us through the process of, so how long does it take you to when you first start sitting down to maybe plan the novel to hitting the publish button? How long is that process looking like?
It probably takes me, I don't know. I'm usually working on two things simultaneously. So I will have, when one book is in the editing process, I'll go ahead and start another, but I can usually get a book out. It's usually about a 3-month period generally. Mm. I know that doesn't line up really with the fact that I've put out 6 books this year, but a couple of the early ones, I really, really was really focused and humped pretty hard to get those out. So I did get a couple of them out a little bit faster. But generally I'm down to where I can get a book done start to finish in about 3 months. And that's with me working a full-time job. So.
Wow. That's incredible. And you've got kids, right?
Yeah. I have a 17-month-old. So.
That's crazy. Okay. So let's rewind a bit and maybe tell us a little bit about how you got into writing and sort of what started you on this path.
Here's the generic answer. I've always wanted to be a writer. I guess everyone says that. So I have to say that because I won't sound like everybody else if I don't. But I've always kind of messed with it. I guess it really started. I spent the majority of my 20s. I'm 31 now. I spent the majority of my 20s playing drums in heavy metal bands. And one of the bands I was in, I actually wrote all the lyrics. So that's when I really started getting back into writing. And I'd always wanted to do a novel, and I just kind of started and stopped and tried a few times. But I never actually finished anything or gotten very far. So fast forward to 2012, I guess late 2011, early 2012, I started on a big weight loss thing, and I was blogging as I was losing weight. In 2012, I was blogging while I lost 100 pounds that year. So I was like, well, you know, I've got this blog going and stuff. I should really write a book about that. So I actually wrote a nonfiction book that was part memoir, but mostly kind of like, this is how I've lost all my weight. And I published that at the very first part of, I always get this timeline mixed up. It's either 2013 or the first of 2014. I can't remember. I know that's a big jump, but I've kind of forgotten about that book. But it was, I mean, it's like not edited or anything. Like it is up. I took it down for when I started doing fiction, for multiple reasons. It's unedited. I was doing personal training for a while. I'm not doing that anymore. I still had a lot of people emailing me, asking me stuff. And it's like, I didn't want to spend time answering those questions. But anyways, I just decided to put it back up so people could find it. So after that, I decided, I was like, man, I wrote this book. I kind of got a little experience in publishing to Kindle and stuff. Like, let's try to do fiction. So late 2014, I started dabbling and writing some short stories and stuff. And I guess it's kind of what led up to where I am now. So,
yeah. How did you when you published that first book, not the nonfiction one, one of the short stories? How did that make you feel?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean, it was awesome. It was it was really cool to have completed something and had something out there. I still didn't really know what I was doing. I still didn't think I needed an editor and all that stuff. Like, you know, it was just, I was still learning. I put this short story collection out with 4 short stories, didn't get them edited, quickly realized that was a mistake. but as far as just getting it out there. It felt really good, and I just kind of felt like I was along the right track. So
yeah. So you say your first novel was the first book in the Empty Bodies series, which, as far as I can tell, it looks like it's kicking the most amount of ass. It just looks like it's doing really well.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
Yeah, so Empty Bodies was actually supposed to be a short story in that collection. It was going to be a story called Warehouse 3427. And because the thing is, it's a zombie story. It's a zombie story with a little bit of a twist. But, you know, I didn't really want to do a zombie book because there's so many out there. And I was just kind of like, well, the market's flooded with it. I want to write more just straight up horror. I don't really want to do zombie, but it'd be really fun to write this one short story. And I had this idea for my day job. I'm a warehouse manager, and we have a 50,000 square foot facility. And during lunch breaks, I have two employees that would sleep in an empty office we have. And so I was walking by one day, and they were sleeping on their lunch break. And I was like, man, I wonder what it'd be like if they woke up and all of us had turned to zombies and they were trapped in this place. So I started writing a story about exactly that. Dude wakes up from his lunch break, and all his coworkers are zombies, and he has to try to, you know, survive in this warehouse. And it was just supposed to be like a 5,000 or 6,000 word short story. And before I knew it, I had like 12,000 words, and I wasn't anywhere close to being done. And I was like, well, I might actually have my first like full book here. So I just kept going. The book is told with three different points of views. So the warehouse guy is one, and there's two other characters. And it kind of skips around showing how they deal with, you know, the start of the apocalypse, basically. That's kind of how that came about. So
it's amazing. It reminds me, I know when I was probably about 18 or something, I think Shaun of the Dead had just come out. And a lot of us, me and my friends, were always like thinking, what would we do if there was a zombie apocalypse? And we all had different plans, different places to go. But it sounds like you took that further.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's basically me. Like, if it had happened while I was at work, like, how would I handle it, you know? And of course, I was writing about a place I was very familiar with. So that made it really easy to, you know, keep it realistic. Like, you know, I would have access to these type of things, you know, like, so it made it very easy to make it realistic. And actually, all three settings that the different characters are in are all places I would be very familiar with. So it was pretty easy to, you know, keep it realistic and show how these people would deal with the problems that are presented in front of them. So,
yeah. What was the initial response to when you first published it?
Better than I expected.
Okay. So what were you expecting?
I expected to put the book out and, you know, and sell a few copies, you know, and then just write the second book. I knew after writing the first book, it was going to be a series. But I just kind of expected maybe a few people to buy it and that nothing would really happen until, I had a few books out. But for some reason, book one took off, and it was just, you know, I don't really know how it happened, but it just caught on to Amazon's algorithms. And I started having a bunch of people sign a mailing list. I had a bunch of people start asking me where book two was. And it was just, the response was very good. Now, early on, you know, it obviously was my first novel, so it had a lot of your typical first novel mistakes. So it did, you know, there are some one-star reviews in the book that the book absolutely deserves. You know, unfortunately, most of those things that people complain about the first and the one-star reviews have been addressed and changed, but those one-star reviews are still there and they deserve to be there. Like I definitely deserved it. You know, it went through a few more edits, cause the original version that went out was edited. But in my editor's defense, she had a lot of work to do because I really didn't know what I was doing. So, you know, I learned from all that, and, everyone who's gotten past the first book who, you know, and a lot of people enjoyed it, but, you know, when they get to the second book, that's like the biggest compliment I get is, wow, your writing got a lot better in one book. So
imagine if you were a weaker person and you just didn't, you know what I mean? You took that to heart, those one-star reviews, and you just gave up.
You know, And the thing is like, if you're, you know, I told myself, like, I mean, I am a pretty sensitive dude when it comes to stuff like that. Like I won't lie, but you know, I told myself up front, I was like, look, if I'm going to do this, like, I may as well just go ahead from the beginning, understand that like, there's going to be negativity and that's fine. And, you know, some of the reviews, you know, I mean, a lot of the reviews said a lot of good things, you know. Now every now and then you get the snarky comments and stuff of stuff that's just not, you know, whatever. But yeah. But I just brush it off. I don't even read them anymore, to be honest with you. I quit reading reviews a while back. So, you know, I keep track of how many reviews the books have, but I don't read them anymore. It's just there's nothing positive comes out of it. So
yeah, so easy to review anything nowadays on the internet, and you just got to push past it, I guess. And
yeah.
So how long after that did you sit down to write book two?
So while book one, like after I published book one, I'd come up with the idea that I didn't want to just write book two immediately. I wanted to do something else, because there were a couple reasons for it. For one, I didn't want to be stuck in the same story for, you know, the series is going to be six books, but I didn't want to be stuck in the same world for six books, because I just didn't think that I would be like, I needed a break from that world. So, and additionally, I didn't want to, it's very important to me that I don't become, you know, the zombie guy. Like I want to be a storyteller. Like I want to tell different types of, you know, stories, mainly in horror. But I want to tell different types of stories. So I sat down and, I actually wrote a story called The Witness, which is kind of a throwback to like 80s slasher horror. So I wrote that while Empty Bodies 1 was being edited and stuff. And then once it went to market, I wrote The Witness, put that out. That book came out really quick. It came out like a month after Empty Bodies did. And that book was actually received very well too. It didn't sell quite as well as Empty Bodies, but it sold really well. And it's more of a traditional horror book. And then after that, I went back to Empty Bodies. I went and wrote Empty Bodies 2, and had it out about 3 months after the first book came out.
So most of the advice I get at the minute is to concentrate on a series. Do you see a big difference between your standalone books compared to the Empty Bodies series books?
Yeah, the Empty Bodies stuff definitely sells better. And that is good advice for you to, you know, focus on one series. You know, for me, like I said, I just didn't want to do that. Yeah. Because I needed a break. Now, since then, I have kind of started focusing more on Empty Bodies. You know, I just finished, like, 4 is coming out Tuesday, which is December 8th.
Ah, so that is a year. So that would be your 6th.
Yeah. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. So, congratulations on that. Sorry.
But no, thank you. But I'm already about 25,000 words into book 5. So book 5 will probably be out in March. I'm trying to finish it and hold on to it and keep that 3-month release schedule that my readers are used to. But I'm trying to get ahead a little bit because I'm trying to start another project, which is actually a collaboration with Jay Thorne, who I know you're going to have on.
Yeah.
He and I are writing a trilogy together. So I'm trying to get a little bit ahead and write the 5th book, which will be the penultimate book, because there's going to be 6 books in this series. But to answer your, to go back, like, so I have started writing the books back to, like, I wrote 3, 4, and 5 were all being written back to back. And then I'm going to take a break and write 6 after I'm done writing the first book in my series with Jay. So it is good advice for you to keep going, because you can, especially when you have momentum in a series.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, Luke, if I could go back now and do it all over again, I probably would have waited to release book 1 once I had like the first 3 books done.
I've heard that a fair bit recently as well. To wait.
Yeah. If I knew what I knew now, I probably would have done that. I think that I would have known more about the story overall, and you can really take advantage. I would have been able to take more advantage of those Amazon algorithms, because that book, the first book, I mean, it hung around the top 1,000 in the Amazon store for like 2 months.
Wow.
Yeah, which is ridiculous for a first book. I mean, it was in the 1,000 to 1,200 range for 2 months straight. So if I would have had the other book like ready to go or already on pre-order, it probably would have carried even more momentum. So
you've published a lot and you've written a lot. What's the difference between you and, say, a lot of these people out there who want to publish a lot and want to write a lot, but they're still on that first book that they've been writing for 5 years or something? What's that different element there?
Honestly, I think it comes down to discipline and drive. I'm an extremely disciplined person. When I really set my mind to something, like, I do it. Like, I mean, I mentioned before, I mean, I lost 100 pounds in a year. I mean, that's like pretty ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so when I did that, I was very focused on that. And I just, you know, I make it a priority. I mean, I mentioned I work a full-time job. So, you know, I'm waking up at 4 a.m, getting to work and making sure I go to work and I lock myself in a back room that we have for an hour before I clock in and I write. On my lunch breaks, I go sit in that same room and I write. I mean, like, I'm making sure that I get all my words in. And, you know, honestly, a lot of people don't want to wake up early and do that. And if you're not willing to do that, then you should probably think about doing something else.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you have I know there's a lot of people in my position that work a full-time job, they have kids, they have a wife, like all these things that I have, and you have to balance that time and you have to have your discipline. So, I would say that's it, just focus and discipline. And, you know, it's just something I really want to do, so I make it a priority.
Do you think that losing those 100 pounds like hardened you a little bit to the discipline, or you say you've always had that?
No, I definitely think that it did. I don't think that I would be where I am if I hadn't done that. Yeah. I don't think I would have put 6 books out this year if I wouldn't have accomplished that, you know. And yeah. and the thing is that, you know, I didn't set out to write 6 books this year necessarily. I just wanted to get that first book done, and I gave myself, and I wanted it done, you know, within a certain amount of time. You know, that's the thing, is you can't, don't make these big goals. Like, you need to just worry about, like, you know, get your, like, make them small. Like, whether that's, you know, I want to get my outline done, or I want to get, you know, the first 20,000 words written, or whatever it is. Like, set yourself small goals so that when you hit those small goals, you feel like you've accomplished something. You know, if my only goal had been to put out 6 books this year, I probably would have been really frustrated, and I wouldn't have been celebrating the little victories in between. So,
I've just been reading a book actually called The One Thing. And that pretty much just says the same thing, to focus on something small and something that has a domino effect that sort of
absolutely
sort of runs through, so you do more and more. What is your favorite book that you've written this past year?
The one that sells the least.
Which one's that? It's
called Lines of the Devil.
That's one of the newer ones though, right?
Yeah, that's my newest. That's the second standalone I wrote. That's definitely my favorite book I've written. I think it's the most creative. It was definitely cathartic for me to write. That book is basically about me in my 20s when I was playing in bands and stuff and used to hang out at a tattoo shop a lot. So there's a lot of personal stuff in that book, but it's also my favorite. It has some of my favorite imagery in it. It's like a supernatural horror novel. You know, I really embrace like some of my inner Clive Barker, as far as imagery, not as far as prose. He's an amazing writer. That's definitely my favorite book. Unfortunately, it sells the least, but that's okay, 'cause I love it. So,
yeah, I love horror. It's pretty much my go-to genre of film, especially.
Yeah.
Even though my fiance is like, physically allergic to them, seems to be. I mean, especially Clive Barker. I love reading Clive Barker. One thing that he does that the stories I'm reading, he sort of switches point of view. He does that whole switching heads thing, which we can't really get away with now. There's a lot of things that he does that we just, if you put something out on Amazon, you get slated for it.
Yeah.
What is it about horror that draws you to it?
You know, it's funny. It's just something I've always been into. I don't really know. I don't really have an answer for that. I mean, I've always been a huge heavy metal fan. I've been a huge heavy metal fan since I was a teenager. And I think that those two things kind of go together. But, you know, when I was younger, Halloween would come on TV, like Halloween 4 or something. And, And I would sit there and look at the TV until Michael Myers came on the screen. Then I'd look away. Like I was terrified, you know? Yeah. So I think being scared by that stuff early on, like especially those 80s slasher movies, kind of drew me in. Like it was like one of those things, like I'm scared to look, but I really want to look. And it just, you know, eventually just drew me in. And that's what I decided I want to write, you know? Now, unfortunately, it's really hard to write series in horror. You know, but you can find ways around it to do it. So
I think it's something to do with that. It sort of gives you a sort of visceral, physical reaction. I remember, I think it was Candyman. I watched it. I was probably too young to watch it, but it shook me for years. Like I couldn't look in a mirror without like expecting him to pop up. But it's a crazy energy. It's weird that people are drawn to scare people, but it's
absolutely fun, yeah. You know?
So if somebody wanted to become a horror guy or a horror author, what would be your first suggestion for them?
Just read a lot of it. Read a lot of, you know, and I guess that's good advice in general for wanting to write. But, you know, just read a lot of horror, you know, start with Stephen King, you know, I mean, the obvious, I mean, Stephen King, Dean Koontz, you know, are kind of the two big guys. And just read it, watch horror movies, you know, that way you can kind of learn, you know, all the different conventions and the structures of writing a horror story that are very important. That's really the best advice. I mean, read Stephen King's On Writing. That's a great book. You know, I know a lot of people love that book, and I actually just listened to the audiobook a couple weeks ago. I'd already read it a long time ago, but that's a really, really, really good book to check out too. So,
yeah. So what, I'm just wondering, so you've got your full-time job, you've got your family and everything. What does your ideal work day look like? And what does your actual work day look like?
So, I guess my ideal work day would be to be writing all day, but, yeah. but unfortunately that doesn't happen. But no, I have a job that I really like. So, I mean, honestly, my ideal work day is kind of, you know, I guess what I'm already doing, you know, like I mentioned before, you know, waking up really early, getting to work early enough to where I can lock myself in a room and write. I work for a drum company, a cymbal and percussion company. So cool thing is too, is the room I write in, we have a drum set in there. So I can go play drums for about 10 minutes before I start writing, which kind of wakes me up. So I usually would do that. I usually get there, play drums for about 10 minutes and then sit down and work and write. And, you know, and then, like I said, I'll spend my lunch break. I'll either go lock myself in that room or I'll go to a coffee shop down the street. And ideally I get all my words in for the day that I want to get in those two sessions, so that when I come home, I don't have to work at all. Like when I come home, I can, come straight home and spend time with my family. And then usually when my daughter goes to bed, I'll go back and I'll do some other stuff like check emails, you know, email people I need to email or do any kind of maintenance stuff on my books or, you know, or I'll read, you know, so, but I try to get all my writing done by the time I'm done with my lunch break at work. So
what's your like daily word count?
It's funny right now. It's kind of changing right now because I've been using dictation.
Oh, okay.
It's been around 1500 to 2000 words, but I'm getting closer to that 2500 to 3000 range now since I've been adding some dictation in. I'm not doing all dictation all the way, but I've just been kind of adding in as I can, and it's increasing my word count. So, but generally if I'm just typing, 1500 to 2000, I'm usually pretty close to 2000. So,
yeah. What's the how are you finding the dictation in general?
I like it. I mean, I know a lot of people have been iffy about it. I'm doing it all through Google Drive. I don't have a new enough Mac to get Dragon. my Mac is from 2008 and it runs like it's brand new, so I'm not replacing it until it breaks.
Yeah.
So knock on wood, but Google Drive, if anyone wants to try dictation, you can use Google Docs and they actually have it for free. And it's actually very accurate. Very, very, very accurate. I use a Blue Yeti microphone and it picks up my voice really clear. And I'll also do it on my phone. So you can do voice typing on like a smartphone as well. Like the other day on the way back from work, I wrote 600 words in the car using a Bluetooth headset and using Google Docs on there. So anyone who's wanting to try it and they're not sure they want to spend the money on Dragon, I'm sure Dragon is great. I just can't get it until I get a newer MacBook.
Yeah.
But you can do it for free on Google Docs and it's really good. So
when you come to read the work back, is there a difference between your dictated work and your keyboard typed work?
Yeah. So what I've been doing is I've been separating the blocks of stuff I've dictated. And this is really new, so I'm still trying to kind of figure out what I want my system to be for it. But I've actually been going back at the end of the day and reviewing the sections that I dictated just to fix them. Yeah. I just do paragraph breaks to like separate, so I know where I, or I'll leave myself a comment that says like, this is where I dictated, because it does, there definitely are mistakes. I'm learning about it to where like I can say, I know that I need to say certain words more clearly and things like that. I guess that'd be the one disadvantage to Google Docs is I don't think it really learns your voice like Dragon would. Mm. But like I said, it's still fairly accurate. So I'll usually go back and edit the day of, but it could get to a point where I just keep those blocks separate, or I leave myself a note, and then the editing process, I'll fix it all. I'm not really sure yet. So
yeah. And what software are you using? So you get it all on the Google Doc, and then do you Scrivener or anything like that? Or?
So I actually recently, another way my word count has come up is I actually have done the unthinkable and I've quit drafting in Scrivener, which I know is total blasphemy. And I know that I know if my buddy Matt Morris hears this, he and I have debates about this. He thinks I'm crazy. But I've actually started doing all my drafting in Google Docs and then moving stuff over to Scrivener for everything else. Because I've increased my word count. I'm able to do the dictation. Another thing, and I actually learned this trick from Monica Lionel. I think it's her book, The 8-Minute Writing Habit.
Yeah.
She mentioned that she has an iPad with a keyboard, one of the keyboard cases.
Yeah.
And she keeps it next to her bed. And when she wakes up in the morning, like the first thing she'll do is write for like 8 minutes or whatever. So I started doing that. When I go sit down to go to bed, usually I'll sit up in bed and I'll read for about 20 to 30 minutes. And what I started doing was that first 10 minutes is I use my iPad with the keyboard case and I will write. I'll time 10 minutes and I'll write. And I've been adding like 350 words to my word count each day. And that doesn't sound like a lot, but if you do that 7 days a week, that adds up really quick.
Yeah.
That comes out to around 2,000 words is about what I've been adding, which is like adding an eighth day.
What is it about the iPad case that works so well?
It's just because it has the keyboard and it's really light. So I like to keep my laptop like... it's usually charging and stuff at night, like, and I don't want to keep it by my bed and all that.
Yeah.
The other thing is there's way less distraction, because you know, it's real easy for me on my laptop to open up, you know, like, and go check Facebook or do whatever. Like, I don't keep any of those apps on the iPad. I just keep the Google Docs, open, and I can write anywhere. Like, you know, that's the other thing is like, I can be like waiting in line at the grocery store or something. And a lot of people can't do this, but I can be like waiting in line at the grocery store and I'll have my phone on me and I'll actually write on my phone. So there's so many other places I can write and I can't do that without Google Docs. Cause I can't have Scrivener on every device.
Yeah.
And all those words add up. I mean, it's so that's what I've started doing. I've started doing my drafting solely in Google Docs, and then I move everything over to Scrivener for formatting, for exporting, all that good stuff. And I've been doing my second drafts and stuff in Scrivener as well, like my read-throughs and all that.
Yeah.
So.
And one thing I just want to sort of mention and make note of is that how like precise your branding is with the covers and it just seems to be so A lot of indie authors sort of span the like every sort of type of cover that they've got, but you've got a very specific cover, and it's they're all good, and they all sort of hint at the story so well. Yeah. Is it the same cover designer for each one?
Yes. The only one that's different is I have a short story called Awaken that's free. That is a different cover designer.
Yeah.
All the other covers are done by a guy that I've been friends with since we were 9 years old. His name's Johnny Diggs. He has a website called Diggs, D-I-G-G-E-S, creative.com. And he does websites and he'll do book covers, all kinds of stuff. Early on, I had mentioned, you know, I put on Facebook, like, oh, I'm starting to write and stuff. And he hit me up and he's like, hey, man, you know, I do graphic design. I wouldn't mind getting a shot at one of your covers. And he did the Empty Bodies cover. The way it is like the very first draft he sent me.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And the cover is, I know the cover is a lot of reason the book sold because that cover is amazing. So he's done all my covers. The other one, the one for Awaken, is done by my buddy K.R. Griffiths. He's actually a horror writer. He writes a couple really good series, a series called Adrift, which is a vampire series. Then he has a zombie series called The Wildfire Chronicles as well. And he did that cover. He's a K.R. actually makes me mad because he makes his own covers and he's his own editor. So and he's damn good at it. He's like the only person I've ever seen where I'm like, I asked him who his editor was after I read one of his books, and he was like, it actually was me. And I was really pissed because he used to be a professional editor. Oh, so, okay. Yeah, which most people I'd say don't edit your own books, but his is actually really, he did a really good job on his own stuff. So
cool. So 6 books this year. Yeah. What do you see being different in 5 years? So where will Zach Bohannon, the author, be in 5 years' time? 30 more books, or
hopefully I have 30 books. Yeah. you know, I plan on keeping at this. You know, hopefully by then I'm full time. I would imagine that I probably will be. My plan is just to keep going. I mean, I have no shortage of ideas. I already know every book I'm gonna write in 2016, which is kind of crazy. I mean, it could change, obviously, but I don't think so because I already have some commitments to stuff. Yeah. So I already know that, I mean, and I'll probably get another 6 books done in 2016. That's my plan. Especially since I'm collaborating, I should be able to get those books out faster. Since Jay and I are collaborating and because of the process we're using, I think I'll be able to definitely get another 6 books out in 2016. I don't know, in 5 years, hopefully, you know, like I said, writing full time and, who knows where the industry will be and what it's going to be like, but you know, I plan on being there. So,
have you got any ideas of other mediums that you'd like to work in, like film or comic books or anything like that?
I think all of us would like to do film eventually. Yeah. I've just started kind of looking into screenplays and learning how to write them by reading them. I'm very early in that because I would like to write a screenplay and you know, get involved in movies. We did an interview recently. It actually posted live on me and Jay's podcast today, the Horror Writers podcast. We did an interview with a writer and director, and it was really, really inspirational for me to talk to him and stuff. So I'd like to do movies, graphic novels, maybe. I'm not that into reading them. I've actually been trying to get into it lately because that'd be interesting. But then we have the podcast. So I really enjoy the podcast we do and stuff. So,
yeah.
But yeah, movies would be really fun. So,
the Horror Writers podcast, can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah. The Horror Writers podcast is just Jay Thorne, who is a horror writer. He and I put out a podcast every Sunday. We keep them short. They're usually 20 minutes long. Some of the interview episodes run a little longer, up to 30, 35 minutes. and we just talk about different topics in horror. The podcast had a previous version of it where it was he and another author, and they actually get, it was like a writing podcast for writers. And that's how I met him. And that podcast was actually very helpful for me when I first started. And then it disbanded, and Jay and I brought it back a couple months ago, and changed the format to where we're, you know, just talking about horror, and, you know, we want not just writers on there, but we want people who like to read and watch horror and stuff. Yeah. So it's, it, there's so many great podcasts out there for writers. We just felt like we had nothing to add. There's too many good ones. So we wanted to do something that was a little more fun. So, so that's what we did. So
cool, man. It sounds amazing. Congratulations again on such a productive year.
Thanks.
I'm hoping I can do some of that next year. We'll see. Have you got any sort of favorite stories or favorite books or games or anything?
Oh, gosh. where do I start? Probably my favorite, as far as books go, probably my favorite books are Stephen King's The Dark Tower series. That's definitely my my favorite books of all time. I can reread those whenever, and really, really, really love those books. I mean, King is just such an amazing writer, and The Dark Tower is so is very different for him. So, because it's more of a dark fantasy and stuff, it's not like typical horror, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't really play a lot of games anymore. That was one thing I had to cut out when I cut that out when I started losing weight and stuff. And it's one, and I haven't gotten back into it just because I'd rather be writing, you know?
Yeah.
So I stick to television shows, you know, try to watch a couple of shows, 'cause that helps me with my writing. So I kind of, any free time I have, like my wife and I have some television shows we watch. So,
cool. Anything in particular?
Right now, as far as what's on, we just started watching The Man in the High Castle.
Looking into that.
I was really excited when it came on because I love the book. I read the book a long time ago, and it's produced by Ridley Scott, who's probably my favorite director. He produced it. It's been great so far. We're only like 3 episodes in. Of course, The Walking Dead just went off, the mid-season finale. I'm not going to get into that because I don't want to be negative, but I'm not sure if I'm going to continue watching that show or not.
Yeah.
It's just kind of losing me.
What I would suggest, I know you don't read comics, but if you read The Walking Dead comics, I think you'd be
pleasantly
surprised.
That's the one graphic novel I'm trying to get into.
Okay.
I've read the first 2 volumes, and I think I may buy the compendium soon.
Yeah.
That's the one I'm really trying to get into, because I've heard so many better things than the show. My favorite TV show probably of all time, though, is Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah.
I've watched Sons of Anarchy all the way through twice. That's probably my favorite TV show of all time. And right now, probably my favorite show on TV that's coming back on soon is Game of Thrones. So I'm really ready for Game of Thrones to come back on. And no, I haven't read the books. So I've read the first 3. So
I'm the same. I don't know what's going to happen next, but I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, exactly. Me too.
So I'm going to call him your cohort, Jay Fawn, on next week. What questions should I ask him? Is there anything that you think I should point out of him?
Yeah, how does he keep his hair so nice? That'd be a really, really good question. He's got gorgeous man hair, so that'd be a really, really. On his head, he's got a real nice mane. And since he's about 25 years older than me, and I'm going bald, I'm kind of jealous. So, I'm just messing. Jay's a really smart guy. He's been great for me. He actually was the very first person to read Empty Bodies. He read a rough draft that no one should have read. But the advice that he gave me after he read it was amazing. And just the fact that he took time out to read some dude he didn't even know's first draft was amazing.
Yeah.
And you know, I would definitely, you know, he's very good with working with other people. He's done some awesome collaborations. He's just a really smart dude, and he's doing a lot of innovative things. He's doing innovative things with his mailing list, with publishing. He's got another podcast that he does, called Dark Arts Theater, that, anyone who does anything creative should go watch it. Even if you don't like the topic, like, it's about horror and heavy metal. But it's so outside the box, that it's really, really cool. So he's just, Jay's the kind of guy who, you know, he kind of acts before he really thinks about it. And sometimes he runs into really cool ideas, and sometimes, you know, stuff doesn't work, but he's not scared to fail.
Yeah.
And it's really, really inspiring. And I'm really glad to call that guy a friend. And you know, like I said, we're about to write a trilogy together, so it's going to be a lot of fun. So
sounds amazing. Cool, man. So where can we keep up with you and your work?
Yeah, so the best place is just www.zachbohannon.com. That'll take you to my website and has all my information. I'm on Facebook. I'm kind of active on there. Twitter, all that good stuff. So yeah, you can just go to my website, contact me if you want to email me. Check out the Horror Writers Podcast if you're interested. That's just at thehorrorwriterspodcast.com. Like I said, we put out episodes every Sunday. So
cool. I'll link up to everything in the show notes as well, so people can just tap or click, whatever's easiest.
Perfect.
Wow, what a cool interview. What a cool guy. I love that accent. So please go check out Zach's work. I think you'll dig it. Oscar's already working his way through Empty Bodies. What do you think?
I like it.
Cool. So remember, next week we have Jay Fawn on the show. But I'll be here on Friday for our regular 5-minute show. So just one more quick shout out. My friend and massive listener, Stephen Brown's short film called The Betting Shop Distraction is online, and it's really cool. It's really funny. It's kind of terrifying in many ways as well. I'll link to that in the show notes, so check that out. If you have something you'd like me to mention on the show, just get in touch through the usual channels, the proper channels, Twitter, Instagram, email, contact form on website. I might just mention it, you know. Cool. All right, guys. Have a good week, and I'll speak to you soon.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.